The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement, and I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie or on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. Thanks to everyone who's been sending me messages and well wishes as I search for fluency over this year in the Irish language, and a few nice messages about people starting the journey with me, which is brilliant to hear. And they want to get tips and things like that. And we'll probably put this episode on the third Saturday of every month, just so you know, so you can kind of tune in for it. We're setting up a kind of a social media page as well, which I'll let you know about. But you can follow me as well on Joe McGill, my Facebook page, Joe McGill, and you can see things going there. I'm on Instagram as well and all those things. So we'll be doing little short videos as well to kind of, I suppose, keep you up to date on the progress. But anyway, very busy program this morning, so I better get to it. We'll hear our new documentary series called Fields of Change, Women in Agriculture. And this is the second episode we'll hear today, featuring Sandra O'Dowd of Ring of Kerry Apple Farm. Brenda McCarthy will be publishing the second book in the Father Ferris Parish History series, his history of the parishes of Rathmore, Gnuffgilla, and Knocknagree. And I'll speak to him. I spoke to him, I think it was 2018, good few years ago now, in Conversation. And we talked about the first book, and it was fascinating to hear all the insight into Father Ferris and then about the history of those particular places that he was talking about that time. So you'll enjoy that, I guarantee. We'll also be speaking to a writer, performer, director, award-winning radio playman. He got an Imro Radio Award, National Award for his radio play, and pianist, Desi Walls, and he will be on to tell us about a new play that will be shown in Kinmare. Desi is living in Derrynane with his wife, Claire. And we'll be talking about the Glimbe, the Well there in Cammon as well, Symphony as well, Holy Well. There's a nice event there taking place at Easter. So we've lots to talk about this morning. So sit back, relax, throw on the kettle, have a cup of tea, and rest in for the next 2 hours, because I hope you'll enjoy this. So first up, during the week, I spoke to Brendan McCarthy about his new book, and it's the second book in the Father Ferris Parish History series, the history of the parishes of Rathmore, Gnuffgilla, and Knocknagree. Brendan, firstly, thanks a million for talking to me. It is a long time since we talked. You were on In Conversation there a few years ago. We were talking off air, when was it? 2018?
Yes, that was June 2018, Joe, and thanks very much for having me back again.
And that was the first volume, and you're bringing out the second volume now. Before we talk about the book, tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a native of Tralee, educated in Tralee, and when I retired a few years ago, I came across the manuscripts of Father Ferris in Kerry Library, and I was kind of looking for a project to engage my grey matter, so I decided I would try to publish these because they contain an absolute enormous amount of detail. So that's basically my background and how I got into the Father Ferris history manuscripts in the library.
And we talked about it because it was the first volume we were talking about in 2018. So the second volume is out now. So tell us a bit about Father William Ferris.
So Father William Ferris was born in Rattoo in North Kerry, and he was a brilliant student at St. Brendan's Seminary in Killarney at the, just before the turn of the 20th century, actually. And he was ordained for the Kerry Diocese in 1906. But in addition to his clerical duties, he felt himself on a bit of a mission. He was a very political animal, and he also believed in revival of the Irish culture and language, which he felt had been left to slide over the past previous generations. And he felt very strongly about that. And he was actually a very early adherent to the Sinn Féin movement in the early 1900s. So that's a little bit about him. He obviously served in many parishes in the Kerry Diocese during his career, but he was a man of tremendous energy, and he got stuck into all sorts of projects, particularly writing histories and reviving the Irish language.
Mm. He wasn't shy about coming forward or speaking his mind, was he? And I suppose that kind of meant trouble even in the early days.
Yes, that's right. I mean, on both fronts, really, on the political front and indeed for his own bishop, he was a very, he was a bit of a free thinker, I suppose you could say. He had very strong views on things, and he believed in not just talking but doing as well. So, for example, you know, he used to write letters in his early career under a pseudonym called Gilleg an Ogla, which means fearless servant. So he got stuck into the political world. He also campaigned very strongly for the famous Sinn Féin election of 1918, when they swept the boards, you might remember. Well, you wouldn't remember, I mean, it's in history, it's a very pivotal election. And he campaigned very strongly in Kerry, and he was very vocal in support. And in fact, during his time in Tralee around 1918-1922, he spoke out very directly in support of the Irish Volunteers in the IRA at the time, and he was actually targeted for assassination. And there's interesting material in the book about that. In fact, there was this gang roaming around North Kerry at the time called the Black Hand Gang, who were kind of associated with the Black and Tans. And they sent out a truck with two guys in it, one day to get him, but through a quirk of luck, he managed to escape. But from then on, he had to wear civilian clothing for a while when he was going around in Tralee. So, I mean, he was fearless. He certainly lived up to his nom de plume, anyway, fearless servant. And indeed, his bishop found it difficult to control him. He gave a very fiery speech when he was in Listowel Parish about the men of the parish should join the Irish Volunteers so that they could resist conscription during this First World War. And there was complaints to the hierarchy, and he had to be moved from Listowel to Fieri's Parish because he was a bit of a maverick or a firebrand, you could say, in his time.
And I wonder, was that common? Like, we know about, I suppose, the priest preaching from the pulpit, but, you know, political speeches and talking in the way he spoke. I wonder, was that common, or was he kind of, did he stand out from the crowd in that sense as well?
I think the degree to which he got involved in it, Joe, yes, he would be a little bit unusual. But in fact, if you look back, the priests these days, and this is not meant in any critical way, but they're not much involved in politics. But around the turn of the century, a lot of young priests coming out of Maynooth were fired up with a sense of nationalism. And so there was a cohort of priests around that time that were quite active. So in that sense, he wasn't unusual, but he was very outspoken and fearless, and he put his head above the parapet.
Yeah, and then the Irish language, you mentioned it there briefly at the start, but the loss of the Irish language at that time, it really hit him to his core, and he really wanted, I suppose, advance all things Irish and Irish culture.
That's right. He, I mean, you know, since the famine and obviously the introduction of national schools had the effect of really diluting Irish, and children were encouraged to speak English from that point forward, and they felt that English was the language that you would be able to get on, get jobs in, get forward. And a lot of people obviously, you know, had emigrated after the famine. But so he felt this very keenly, and he felt that Irish language is what the essence of being Irish was. And he felt that to lose that language was something that if we lost it completely, we could never get it back. And similarly with Irish culture and music and history and just general local history and folklore, people were sort of saying, look, we've too much on our plate now. We can't be worried about that sort of stuff. But he felt that he had to counteract that. And he put it in this way. He called it creeping Anglicization. So people, you might be called Limo Moracu, you know, 30 years ago. Now you were William Murphy, and you lived in Guinevere Gillet, but now you're living in Guinea Gwilla. So he felt that it's getting his tentacles into every aspect of society, and he felt that this was a prize that he should really fight to revive and recover and stop, counteract any more of that Anglicization, because he felt Ireland was losing its essence.
Yeah, he had a different description for Tralee as well. What did he call it?
Well, yes. I mean, he was a man that spoke his mind. You know, he didn't believe in diplomacy or finesse. He said it like it was. So he called Tralee one of the most Seanean towns in the four corners of Ireland. And that was actually in the course of one of his political speeches for the 1918 election. Seanean meaning, of course, that people were aping all things English and were losing their Irish sort of pride in their identity. So that's the sort of Seanean word which he used quite a lot, you know.
Yeah. Getting on to the parish histories then, you know, this is brilliant and that you've been able to uncover it as well, because he wrote the parish histories of five parishes. So tell us about that.
Yes, he did. Yes, after the Civil War, he got very disillusioned about the whole political scene. In fact, he withdrew from the sort of world of politics, and he was quite a political animal for the first sort of 20 years of his career. But he felt that that the Civil War really had knocked the stuffing out of Ireland, and people had lost their, he called it a malaise. The country fell into a malaise. So he decided to pull out of the sort of political activism. But he instead devoted himself, I guess, to the sort of cultural side of things, particularly local history. And he started this project when he was in Fiery's parish. And he developed it from there on in four subsequent parishes. So what he would do is he put together a sort of a questionnaire that he would use at station masses, which you listeners will know are like local masses in local houses around the country area and in the spring and in the autumn. And all the local people would get together for those masses, particularly elderly parishioners. And when the mass was over and done with and they were having their tea and stuff, he would produce his questionnaire, and he would particularly zoom in on elderly parishioners, because he had a saying. He said, every time the east wind blows, it takes an old Shanachie with it. So he knew that the clock was ticking on capturing all of this folklore and local heritage and history. And he wasn't really looking for the story of, you know, battles and generals and lords and ladies and landlords. He was looking for the stories of the ordinary people, the hedge schools, the teachers, the famine, you name it, the families, the land, the place names, the river names. And he wanted to capture all of that. So he would collect all that material, and then in the evenings he would go back to the presbytery and write it up by hand. And one of the barriers really to publishing this was the fact that it was all handwritten, or it is all handwritten, and that took a lot of my time deciphering that and getting it into a typescript.
I hope he had good handwriting, Brendan.
Well, I'm sorry to say he didn't. So it took me quite a while. So each book takes me probably 3 or 4 years to produce, because most of it is actually trying to get through his handwriting. But I think I've made a pretty good fist of it. But and people have dipped into these manuscripts previously, but I think have been put off by the handwriting, and it's just very dense stuff. And he used to write up the side of pages and all over the place. So that's basically where the whole parish history side of things came from. So back in 2018, as you mentioned at the outset, I produced the first book, which was his History of Ballymacallaghet and the three other associated parishes over there just to the east of Tralee, Ballyseedy and O'Brienan and Knowheval. And that was received very well, actually. It sold out very quickly. And indeed, 5-6 years later, I'm still getting inquiries from people for, it's out of print now, unfortunately, for copies of it. So there was a tremendous appetite for that. And one of the key things I should mention, Joe, is it's fully indexed on people and places, which I think is critical. Because if your family was from there, if you lived there now, or if you were emigrated abroad, you can look up your family name, your townland, your village, your farm, and it's all indexed. So it's a resource. It's almost, people can dip in and out of it. And I've done the same sort of system with the book I'm just publishing right now, which is when he was in the parish of Rathmore in the 1920s. In fact, exactly 100 years ago this year, 1924. And that is produced to the similar degree of standard with the index, etc.
Yeah.
So that's the parish of history of Rathmore, Guineagwilla, and Knocknagree.
Yeah, that's excellent. It's excellent here that you did index them, and I know just from talking to people, that's why they love Getty as well, because they were able to kind of reference or just go in and nitpick as well. But it's not just an a la carte book. The last book, when I was reading it, it's just brilliant from cover to cover.
Brendan McCarthy there. We'll take a break and we'll return to that interview after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now let's return to the interview I did with Brendan McCarthy on his new upcoming book for the Ferris Parish History Series, History of the Parishes of Rathmore, Gnuffgilla and Knocknagree. Just in relation to Father Ferris again then, the sport, and we talked about this the last time as well, Cod or Cad, is it? You know, that sport that he created himself, or he or brought it back.
He revived it, yes. Certainly. This was the football, well, actually, that's a misnomer. It's actually not football, it's ball carrying. So I think we should be thinking something more along the lines of rugby than Gaelic football. But so this was an ancient Irish ball carrying game called Cod, C-A-I-D, and it would be played in Ireland up to about maybe the famine times, middle of the 1800s, maybe a little bit later. And how it worked was that you would have two teams who would try to contest for a ball, an oval ball like a rugby ball, and often played between parishes, and the winner was the team who could bring the football or the rugby ball to the gate of their own parish church. Now there was very little rules involved in this. It was you could tackle people, knock people over, wrestle people, trip people, anything like that. So imagine no numbers involved, gangs of usually men ranging across two parishes fighting each other for the ball, and then when you got the ball you ran like hell to your parish church gate. So he decided to revive that when he was in the Rathmore parish, and there's quite some interesting material about that in the book. He organized a three-way tournament in 1926-27 around Christmas 26, New Year's 27. Ultimately Rathmore won that tournament. It was a three-way series of games, but in the heat of battle on two occasions, those games involving Knocknagree, which is just across the River Blackwater from the other two parishes, you had to cross the Blackwater River, and the ball ended up in the Blackwater River, and this in the heat of battle anyway, and this is the middle of winter time now, in a fast flowing, the Blackwater River is quite a substantial river. Two players plunged in to kind of get the ball, and I think they had to be, one of them had to be pulled out, somebody had a horse, and they went in on a horseback as well and pulled this character out. So after that, the parish priest of Rathmore, bearing in mind Father Ferris was a curate now, not the parish priest in Rathmore, he called a halt to the initiative or the project on the basis that sooner or later somebody would end up getting drowned. So that was the end of his experiment with cod, but a very interesting experiment nonetheless.
Yeah. You hear the phrase, oh, he's fond of the drink. Well, Father Ferris was definitely not fond of the drink and had strong views on that as well.
He did, yes. I mean, he felt that a lot of Ireland's problems around that time and maybe even today are, you know, were caused by drinking and people spending their money on drink. He was fervently anti-alcohol all through his lifetime, and I think he joined the pioneers when he was back in Maynooth. But he was a frequent subject of his sermons, and he used to have this favorite saying when he said, "There's more nourishment in licking the back of a postage stamp than and drinking a bottle of porter." But there's a very funny story. In fact, a man contacted me recently when I just published my Rathmore book, and his father came from the next Mill Street parish, where in fact Father Ferris went on to serve in Mill Street parish in the 30s, and he every Tuesday in Mill Street in the 1930s they used to gather the empty barrels of porter together outside what was called the Railway Hotel in order to put them on the train back to the Guinness Brewery to be refilled. And Father Ferris used to walk his parish. He walked about 5 miles a day. He was into walking and exercise as well. And he passed this, and there was a huge amount of empty barrels, and there was a man loading them there. And he said to the man, "Were all those used in this town?" And the man said, "Oh, no, Father, they're from Cullen, which is a small village just outside Mill Street." And he walked off without a word. And the following Sunday, the first words of his sermon were, "The road to Cullen is the road to hell."
There's lots more we could be talking about, including, I suppose, you know, getting back to his own kind of beliefs and about that he thought it was virtually impossible to commit a mortal sin, and that lots of people travelled from all around to get their confession heard by him. But just finally, I suppose, his legacy, and I know you're preserving his legacy, really, because you're bringing it back to life, but what is his legacy?
Well, obviously, he was a man of many paths. I suppose he was a maverick, he was a polymath. But I think for me, his best legacy are these histories he wrote of these parishes, because there's an enormous amount of detail in there, Joe. So having been done two books now, and there are three more to go, which are Mill Street, Fieries, and Alahees, this is a treasure trove which I think must be preserved. So that's his legacy as far as I'm concerned. And the appetite for the previous book has proved that people are very keen to kind of tap into this, and it's accessible now with a fully indexed book, and I'm actually launching the book on Friday the 5th of April in Chock Iasagoin in Rathmore at 6:30 in the evening, and everybody is welcome to attend if they'd like to. And in fact, I have a website, if I may just mention that, Joe, before we finish.
Yep.
Rathmorehistory.com. You can buy the book on there, and there's some more information about the book. And it's also for sale in Tralee and O'Mahony's and Polymath, and will be for sale in Killarney bookshops very shortly. So that's, you know, in a nutshell, his legacy as far as I'm concerned.
Excellent. And the launch, again, Friday, 5th of April at Chock Iasagoin, Rathmore, 6:30 p.m. And I presume, Brendan, all are welcome?
Yes, all are welcome. All are welcome. Yeah. And we have Sean Kelly, MEP. He's going to take a break from his campaigning for the European elections and launch it for me. So I'm very grateful to him. So it should be a good evening.
Excellent, and best of luck with it. And I can imagine the evening itself, even talking to people that might have connections in the book and all that, it's probably very rewarding for you to get it to that stage then, because you're doing all this painstaking work kind of, I suppose, on your own, and then to see the fruits of your labour come out in that night, I can imagine it'll be an emotional night as well. So thanks a million for coming on, and we wish you the best of luck, and I can't wait to talk to you about the other volumes.
Thanks very much, Joe, for having me on. I appreciate it very much.
Yep, Brendan McCarthy there, and he's really dedicated his life to this, which is brilliant to see, and to preserve it, which is so important. Every time the east wind blows, as he said, a shanachie goes with it. And I'd always say it on this programme, remember, when an old person dies, a library burns, a similar kind of a phrase. So he's doing important work there, and we wish him all the best of luck with it. Now, after the break, we'll be hearing from Desi Walls, who lives in Derrynane, about his new play that's going to be taking place in Kinmare very shortly.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, so before the break, I said we were going to talk to Desi Walls. Desi is a writer, performer, director and pianist, and he's an award-winning he has an award-winning play done on radio as well, and lots of different things that he's won awards for, but a National Radio Award is a great feat as well. His new play, Not the Life I Ordered, will be live at the Carnegie in Kinmare from the 2nd to the 7th of April, and I caught up with him during the week to talk about it.
Desi Walls, and the production is This Is Not the Life I Ordered.
Desi, thanks a million for chatting to me. We had a chat a few years ago. I really enjoyed it. And oh, yeah, I think you were on my Kingdom 2K, where you described your 2 kilometres around your house and the walk.
Oh, yes, yeah. What was it? Yes, I was. Yeah. That's right, yeah.
And you had a beautiful walk around where you lived.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, for me, it wasn't a prison, you know.
Yeah. And where do you live again?
We live in Derrynane, overlooking the beach. And you do a walk down around Bonavalla Pier and over the Mass Path and onto the beach, and it's fabulous, and the Cahir Daniel, if you've got the energy.
And is that where you get your inspiration, those walks? Is that where you get a chance to kind of think and to create?
Sometimes songs, you know, that's more kind of poetry comes in from places like that. But little songs, somebody asked me to write a song about a whiskey once, which was very strange, but anyway, I wrote something called The Blue Hour, and I thought it was absolutely perfect, but he said he couldn't call it The Blue Hour because there was some other drink, not even a whiskey, called The Blue Hour. And it was because when you look out our window during the day, when it gets to, say, 7 in the evening on an evening like this, the whole place, the whole sky goes blue, the mountains go blue, everything goes blue. And for about an hour, it's like that, and then it's dark. And it's beautiful. So,
A lot of your work is award-winning, it's of a high standard, so really looking forward to what you're going to tell us about now. So what is this project? And we'll find out where it's on after that, but tell us about it.
Right, it started 18 years ago when my brother came to me when I was living in a forge, a converted forge, in Mount Rath in County Leash. That's probably irrelevant. But anyway, we sat down to a little meal, just the two of us, and he started to tell me about how in middle age something had changed completely in his life. And by the time we'd finished the dinner, he said to me, "Will you write my story?" And I said, "Yes, as it happened, you know, my life wasn't exactly the one I ordered either, you know, and for very different reasons." So it developed into a play, which we started doing together. And we did it, first of all, just in people's houses and little places around Portlaoise. Portlaoise people were very supportive of it. And then we put it on because I was doing gigs, piano gigs at the time in Kinsale. So the first place we ever put it on was over a Thai restaurant in Kinsale. And you could seat 17 people. And the night before the first show, when we went to dinner, we had 15 tickets sold of the 17. And there was a lady sitting over with her daughter. She travelled over as a tourist from America, though originally from South Africa. And she was sitting in a booth, and she noticed that three people were very crowded and in the seat next to me. So she said, "Would you like to swap? You'd have more room over there. And there's only two of us, so we're fine there." So she ended up sitting just kind of next to me and her daughter there. And I had a poster on the thing, and I was thinking of the two tickets we had to sell. So I turned the poster towards her, and, you know, through the waiter, you can break the ice, you know, because the waiter's talking to both of you, and then, you know, conversation become one. I said, she said, "And what is that drawing?" I said, "Well, it's a play we're doing tomorrow night." "All right. Are you selling tickets for it?" "Yeah." We said, yeah, you would enjoy it. So it's actually the absolutely first time we ever did it, and it's maybe a bit rough when, you know, with this, my brother Peter and, you know, and so forth. And we sold her the tickets, and she said, "No, you better turn up." So we did turn up and we did the show. And at the end of the show, you know the way it is in Ireland, there were only 17 people at the show. So I said, "Why doesn't everybody join us in the bar next door?" And 15 did, but she didn't and her daughter didn't. And she told me afterwards it was because she felt like I must have been joking. The whole audience joined, you know, but anyway, I wasn't. A few weeks later, she wrote for a CD, but we didn't have an album of the musical play as it was. We had just recordings of songs I had recorded before, and they were sent over, and she wrote back and said, "The song I'm looking for isn't on it." So she said, "The song I'm looking for is called Do Up Your Necktie and Dance," which is about how men particularly are herded into uniforms, and this is how you behave, and this is office behaviour, and this is how, you know, and they almost become clones of each other. I apologise to anybody who does regularly wear a necktie, but I found out this the hard way. And my brother certainly found it out the hard way. He was an accountant. So she loved that song, she loved the whole idea behind it, and I didn't have a recording of it because it was only written the week before. So I sent her the words and we became pen pals. And she was living in Florida, and she said, "You know what, you should come over to Florida and visit in the winter, because you're doing piano gigs in the summer in Kinsale."
And was this the piano with the bike or just piano?
Yeah, no, the piano with bike was around there as well, yeah. But it was the actual gigs I was doing, yeah, was just on an ordinary, yeah, piano. We tried the piano bike in the bars, but it didn't work so well. I was a bit high up above the crowd. So anyway.
Not very proud.
Yeah. No, good question. So I went over to Naples, Florida, and the problem was that, you know, people like music everywhere, but some places they don't like certain words. And I won't say it because we're on radio. But there is a word that I have no trouble using. I think it's a very effective word when used in the proper way. But over there, no, you can't say that word in. You can't say it in Florida. It's funny, they're both F's, but you can't say that word in Florida. So anyway, that was that. But, you know, we hung around for about 9 days talking about everything, and then we found we had a lot in common in theatre and poetry and that kind of thing. And then something happened, and she's my wife.
So,
so anyway, that's what happened. And that was well, we got married 16 years ago in December in London, and it was very complicated flying back and forward to across the Atlantic for a while. But anyway, that kind of I'm jumping a lot now, but we only got 15 minutes, so I'm jumping a lot. We now are working intensely together on putting on the definitive version of the show that she saw the absolute beginning of. But it really was a rough beginning, you know? Yeah.
And tell us your wife's name.
My wife's name is Claire Smith, for anybody who knows her around here. She runs a B&B, and she... But she's kind of put that aside in the winter, and we worked through this whole winter. We had done a recording in Terry Gordon's studio, where I've done a lot of work. Terry is a fabulous studio. If anybody wants,
Terry's amazing. He built the studio himself, but he's just such a professional as well, and what a great gentleman as well to work with. I'd imagine
absolutely. He's one of the best guys you could possibly work with, and he's meticulous, absolutely meticulous, and that really helps. And it also gives you a feeling about your work when you're bringing work to him. You want it to be right before you record it. So we did a lot of recording, radio plays, and we won IMRO the play of the year. Like, it's very different to what this is, because this is a live show. But Not the Life has developed over the years, or This Is Not the Life, I ordered to give it a full title. And because of the recording we did of it with two top professional artists, we decided we're going to put it on stage. And one of those is going to be in it, and there's another new guy who's from Fair City called Dave Kelly. Andrew Pepper is the guy who's both on the recording and going to be on the stage. He's a fabulous cabaret artist from London. Well, he's actually from Bolton, but he probably wouldn't want me to say he's from London, but he's been in London so long now and very popular in London. Just been to Paris for some fabulous show too. These guys are really great performers. Mm. And this is what we want, to really top performers doing this show, which I have worked and worked on. It wasn't that it wasn't great at the start. It got the laughs, it got the entertainment, it got the reaction, because I had been an entertainer before I was a writer. But there's a difference.
Yeah, and before, well, you can tell us the difference, and then just tell us, what is the play all about? You mentioned humour, but like, it strikes me, is it a midlife crisis, or what is it?
Yeah, it is a kind of a midlife crisis. So there's a scruffy Jack who's a musician, and I don't want to blame this on all musicians, but I was certainly that at one time. And he comes knocking on his brother's door because he needs a place to stay for the night, having been thrown out by yet another woman. But his brother's getting married the next day to the boss's daughter, which Simon is the brother. Jack doesn't really approve of this. He thinks it's kind of social climbing, and you know. So there is an obvious clash between the two cultures of these two brothers, and the mother is kind of a central point of, like, kind of, well, you were a big disappointment to her, Simon says to Jack at one point. And the songs kind of tell you the story of who these guys are and so forth. And the thing about it is that by the knock you get on the door, which is oh no, not him, could turn out by the end of the day to be just the knock you needed. And life is often like that. So This Is Not the Life I ordered is more Simon's than Jack's. It wasn't the life Simon ordered, but to realise it, something had to happen, and happen just at the right moment. And Jack being there is a very important part of it.
I've seen on your social media posts, and people should follow you on Facebook and things like that, because I think your humour, you put up limericks, poems, songs and all that. So this, I'd imagine, there is going to be a degree of humour, but you do pathos, you do serious stuff very well as well. Is it a mixture of both?
It is. It's a rollercoaster ride, because it sometimes, some of the scenes, you don't want laughs, because it ruins the depth and the drama. But I was asked today, we were out in the street in Kenmare today talking to people about it, and one guy said to me, is it a drama or a comedy or a musical? I said yes it is. It's all those things, and it's those things in a good way, because if you just went in and said, I want to enjoy great music, you would. If you want to see a great drama, it's there. But all great dramas should have a few laughs in it. I mean, life has laughs in it, doesn't it? Mm. So great drama needs to have a few laughs. Even when I did Searching for Dadley D, which is a sad story about losing my father in a plane crash at 19, as you know, there were a few laughs in it, because it wouldn't be life if it didn't have laughs. Laughs is a medicine as well as everything. This isn't particularly a lot of laughs. There's a lot of laughs in the songs, but they're not all funny songs. And there's a lot of laugh between the characters and their interactions, particularly when they start off poles apart and then kind of are brought gradually together. It can be very funny.
And is there a lot of you in it? Because I know, like you mentioned, the Search for Dadley D, that was Turskell Rock, wasn't it?
The tragedy.
Yeah, that you lost your dad. There was a lot of you in that, and there was some powerful scenes in that. Are you drawing a lot from your own inspiration or your brother's, or what are you doing?
I am. It's at the same time, it's only a part of me. Turskell Rock was hugely my whole life experience and how my relationship with my father was affected by it. There's not as much of me in this, but maybe there's a fun part of me, a part of me who struggled as a musician, struggled to even have the guts to become a musician. You know, like, that is the biggest struggle of all, you know, when you say, oh, I'd love to, but I shouldn't, you know? And then one day somebody says, but there's an opportunity, and you take it and you say, why didn't I do this years ago? You know, so it's like that bit of me is in it. That kind of scruffy musician, well, if they don't like me with a t-shirt, they wouldn't like me even if I dressed up. That kind of attitude, because I'm a rebel, you know, I'm against the world, and you know, so that's in Jack, you know. And I did have a lot of that in me when I was younger. And Peter, my brother, who Simon is kind of based on, had a lot of the, well, there's a proper way to do it, and the right way to do it, and you should do it the right way and all that. And of course, that exploded on him too. So that's what makes it interesting. Both extremes can explode.
I love the idea of something that you've been working on all those years and trying to perfect it, and that people are going to get the chance to see it. Also, I'm very enthused by the fact that I've done a number of interviews over the last year or two with people putting on plays and performances and theatre in this county. There seems to be an explosion of homegrown, high quality performances being put on. That must be very exciting for yourself as well, and to get a place to show it off.
I don't want to make a big thing of this, but Dublin sometimes think that everybody in Ireland knows everybody else in theatre because they know each other, but they don't know everybody in theatre. There is theatre all over this country, and Kerry is an extremely creative place. I mean, John B. Keane, you know, I won't go through the list because, you know, I might miss somebody. Because there's so many talented people that have come out of Kerry, actors, writers, everything, and it continues.
Yeah. And on that, it continues in April. Tell us the dates it's on and where is it on, because I always think the venue is so important as well.
Yes, well, it's on in the Carnegie, but it's not Carnegie Hall in New York. It's way more important than that. It's the Carnegie Arts Centre in Kenmare, that high-class place, you know, just a
wonderful
place. It is a lovely town with a wide variety of people living there, and they all get on with each other. It is an absolutely lovely town. I live 50 minutes from it, but it's still my town.
And when is it on, and tell us the date?
It is on from the 2nd of April to the 7th of April. That's immediately after Easter. So you have Easter Monday on the 1st, and then the real fun starts on the 2nd when the play opens. Angus McAnally is coming down to open it. So any of you who were old enough to remember Anything Goes or
the lyrics board,
those kind of things. Angus was mostly behind the scenes through his RTE career. And of course, a very important thing about Angus was he did the Christy Hennessy story, and he took it around the country and packed houses all over the country.
And his father, of course, was Ray.
His father was Ray McAnally, one of the legends of Irish acting. Angus is also an excellent snooker player and is actually a snooker referee.
And to get back to the dates again, tell us the dates and the times and where can we book, where can people go?
You can book by going to notthelife.com. Notthelife.com. We're doing it through a company, a very good company in Wicklow called GR8 Events. You can also go there, but then you have to search for it. Better to go directly to notthelife.com. Then you'll see tickets. You click that, it brings you to GR8, and you book your tickets and you book your seat. We have numbered seats, and that's a first for Kenmare, but we you actually can pick the seat you're going to be in. And it's from the second, and the second is going to be the crack. I would really say to people, I know it's a Tuesday and you don't normally go out on a Tuesday, go out this Tuesday. This will be great. The spirit will be fantastic. There are five more days then after that, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It finishes on Sunday the 7th.
And what time?
It is at 8 o'clock, but come along at 7.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always better to be there a little bit in time, and there's a great buzz, you know, as you stand waiting for things to happen, and you never know who you see.
I can see you're always shaky with excitement. You're really looking forward to it, because I can imagine, like, all this work, and it's coming to fruition.
Yeah.
Desi, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Give my best to Claire. She's a great woman. I meet her time to time, and thanks for talking.
Okay, thanks very much. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, that's Desi Walls there. Always a pleasure to talk to Desi, and we wish him the best of luck with that. We'll take a break with more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Hi, Deirdre here with O'Callaghan Coach Holidays. Our 2024 Coach Holidays brochure has something for everyone. Visit Paris or Edinburgh, explore Northern Ireland or Normandy, discover Donegal or Devon, or take a tour to the Cotswolds, Connemara, the Lake District, Blackpool or Manchester. For details, visit O'CallaghanCoaches.com.
It's not just that Sarah can't rely on the rains to come this year. It's not just that the only water left could cost her life. It's not just that she has seen all her crops destroyed and she is struggling to feed her little boy. Like thousands of parents living in regions devastated by drought, Sarah is living in fear, and it's not just. This Lent, your help can make all the difference. Visit trochra.org or call 1-800-408-408. Trochra. Together for a just world.
Lane Brothers Home Store. Massive sale continues at the Horn Centre Tralee. Up to 60% off accent chairs. Up to 50% off sofas. Half price bed frames. And 30% off hotel mattresses. It's first come, first served. So don't miss the massive sale this weekend at Lane Brothers Home Store. Must end Sunday 24th.
Radio Kerry's Radio Bingo. For just €5, you get to play Monday to Friday for the chance to win or share in a daily cash prize of €400 and Friday's weekly jackpot. There are over 65 shops across the county selling books. If you live in Tralee, you can get your books in Barry's Food Store, Burns Spar, Oak Park and Cahersalee, Hussey's Princess Street, O'Connor Spar, Clash Cross and Garvey Super Value Tralee. For more, see radiokerry.ie/bingo.
Every weekday from 3, let Brendan Fuller steer you through your afternoon with great music and entertainment on Radio Kerry's Afternoon Show in association with Billy Nocton Volvo Tralee. Hop in for a show packed full of features, interviews, brand new music and plenty more to keep you entertained. The Afternoon Show on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Billy Nocton's Tralee, home to the Volvo Recharge range of pure electric and plug-in hybrid cars. Designed for a better way to move through the world. Unlock electric at billynocton.ie.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now, next Saturday will be Frank Lewis. He'll be along for his monthly programme. So on the Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, next Saturday, March the 30th, from 9 to 11, join Frank on a walk to hear legend, place, antiquity, history and folklore of a man and a place. Over 18 years planning and leading some 1,400 walks for the Aunascall Walking Club. On the club's website, William Glasgow Howe is listed as their walks officer, cartographer, photographer and honorary president. And that is next Saturday with Frank Lewis. Lots more to come on the programme in the next hour. We'll be hearing our new documentary series called Fields of Change, Women in Agriculture. This is the second episode where we will be featuring Sandra O'Dowd of Ring of Kerry Apple Farm. We'll also be talking to John G. O'Dwyer about the Pilgrim Paths, and they're having a festival around Easter time as well. Some wonderful walks in that, including two distinguished Kerry ones. And we'll also be speaking about St. Finian's Well in Glenbay, another walk going on there on Easter Monday.
celebrate that wonderful well and the restoration they did to its Symphonian's well there. And I walked there in 2018. Oh, I brought a few of my family members as well. We had a great day out with the handball club that time, and they've always raised money for different charities. So it's a wonderful initiative. The committee there should be very proud. But we'll take a break, and then we'll have the news, and I'll join you again in the next hour.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
The Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now we're into the second hour of the Saturday Supplement. Later on, we'll be talking about the Pilgrim Paths Easter Festival. We'll also be speaking to Sean Roach of the Glenbay Holy Well Committee. But before that, our new series, documentary series called Fields of Change, Women in Agriculture. This documentary showcases women in agriculture across the county. And in this second episode, we're going to hear from Sandra O'Dowd of Ring of Kerry Apple Farm.
This documentary is a Cishta Communications production, funded by Cumashuna Man with a television licence fee.
Sandra O'Dowd, we're here in Mid Kerry in Castlemaine. We're here actually at the moment standing in our orchard of the Ring of Kerry Apple Farm, the O'Dowds.
Sandra O'Dowd of Ring of Kerry Apple Farm, along with her husband Michael and their family, never tire of apples. And it's just as well. From their orchard of 1,000 apple trees in Ballycrispin in Castlemaine, they produce apples for eating and juicing. The family's hives of bees pollinate the apple trees. In addition, they have a dairy farm and raise poultry for sale too. Although Sandra has been involved in farming most of her life, she didn't grow up on a farm.
No, I didn't grow up in a farm family. I came from Ballyheigh myself, but I suppose a lot of my friends that I went to school with, they were back from farming backgrounds, and I suppose I did spend a lot of time above in their farms, and I was very interested in the animals. They had everything above one of them. They had pigs, they had sheep, they had everything. And we were always helping out, myself and the friend always was pulled in more than helping out. We were told we had to help, and I always had a hand in with them, and I always was interested in it with them as well. There would be a lot of farmers big out there in North Kerry. A lot of neighbours around me, because I was out in the country, so I suppose all the neighbours around me, most of them are farmers. And like that, they'd always might call for a helping hand every now and again. We used to pick spuds for a neighbour. Myself and my sister used to always head up there and spend maybe a week or so above helping picking spuds. And look, we always helped out if we had to help out neighbours. That's what neighbours used to do then.
It was when Sandra married her husband Michael that her career in agriculture began in earnest.
I suppose I met Michael in 1998, and I suppose like that, one thing led to another, and we got married in 1993, and he was here farming with his mum and dad, and we took up over the farm in 1997, and we're here since. Now, look, it's a great place to rear kids. Now, I did work in Pretty Polly for a number of years in Killarney, but I suppose when I decided we were starting our own family, I kind of wanted to be at home, mom at home, to help rear them. So I just kind of came full-time farming then with Michael, my husband. Like that, we have five kids. We have four daughters and one boy. My second daughter now is at the moment, she just started finishing her agricultural course, a degree in Tralee, her 4 years. At the moment now she's actually teaching above in Penisginry. So like that, I suppose when you're reared in it, I suppose the interest is always there, because all of them have that interest in the farming. My son there now, he just finished his Green Cert course. Now I was very sad to hear from him, out of about 40 students that done it, there was only four girls, which was very low. You know, I suppose you'd like to see girls being supported and encouraged at a very young age to go into the farming. But it doesn't seem to be there for them, really. There's no organisation there for women, a women organisation in agriculture. Now, I know they do be on an awful lot there about the gender balance and everything else, but that's all you're hearing about it. There's nothing actually being done for it. I would love to see an organisation there for women. I mean, I know several women that are in farming organisations, but sometimes they'd be saying how they feel that they're not wanted there, that they don't be involved in a lot of the stuff that's going on. It's just like they're not asked for their input. And even they kind of get so disappointed, they say, you know, you feel like getting out of it. But at the end of the day, we want women in it, not leaving it. But the way things are ran by a lot of the organisations, you would feel very disappointed and disheartened, and you'd say, why am I doing this? But look, we'll keep fighting. The women have to be more involved, like I said before, in everything to do with agriculture. I mean, right, there might be one or two sitting on a board for it and everything else, but they're not getting their input in there. They're not being listened to. It's, like I said, the balance isn't there. It has to be brought in. There might be one woman to 10 men. That's no good. You have to have an equal balance there. And hopefully then there will be voices heard for the women.
Sandra's daughter, Louise, like her mother, is also pursuing a career in agriculture.
Like I said, I suppose we have to see what comes up in agriculture, what jobs comes. Now, like I said, she was very lucky. She got into Pan Skinnery there for this year anyway. We'll see where it goes from here. But she won't go doing anything else because she do love what she does. So she will definitely go down that route. We'll have to see what jobs pops up along the road, and hopefully she'll get one that will be interest of hers and that she will love it.
Like a lot of farmers, Sandra and Michael had to diversify their farm business in order to thrive. And this is why Ring of Kerry Apple Farm was created.
Well, we set this here in 2010. And at the moment, thanks be to God, they're all finished for the year. We've them all picked. We supply all the super values in the county. We all supplies the fruit and veg. We do also a few hotels. We make the apple juice and as well. So that would be into the hotels, really. We make small bottles and big bottles. The big bottles are mainly super values and local shops. The small bottles would be for the hotels. The Muckross Garden and House Hotel in Killarney would be one of the main places that we would be selling a lot to. And it seems to be going fairly well, and we'll keep at it as long as we can.
Within the orchard, there are a variety of different kinds of apples.
There's we have the Cookers, which is the Bramley apples. Then we have also Eaton apples, which is Elstars. We have Johnny Golds, and we have Johnny Prince's. Now, they all come in at different stages of the year, so we'll be selling the first ones, we'll say, which is the Elstars, and then you'll be moving on to Johnny Prince's. They all didn't ripe at the same time, so one lot is gone when the other lot is ready. So you sell them first as to come, and then you'll be going on to the Johnny Golds. They would be the last of the Eaton apples for the year. And like I said, we have them all picked at the moment. They're in the cold room ready for bagging, and that's our job now for the weekend.
So what is Sandra's role within the business?
Everything. I suppose it's all hands on deck, from picking to bagging to delivering everything. I do the lot. The kids at the weekends know that we have to have bags of apples bagged for the week for when the orders comes in. So the weekend they're all here and they're all helping out. That's what we need, and that's what they do. They know we need it.
Sandra really enjoys the sales aspect of the business.
I do. I love it. I suppose it's nice to get out and meet people. As you know, farming can be very isolating. I go to Tralee, Listowel, Killarney, Carsaveen, Dingle. A lot of driving, but it's great to get out there, meet people, see how their day is going, see how my day is going, and have the little talks and chats. It is very intense and busy, but look, somebody has to do it, and if you're willing to do it, we go and do it.
Like all businesses, there are many challenges involved in agriculture.
Well, I suppose the challenge is the weather. The weather is one main obstacle in every part of it. At the end of the day, the work, I suppose, is very intense. You have to be there 24/7. There's no point in saying, all right, I'm going to take 3 days off and going away. You always have to have someone here to run the place, to look after the place, and it's hard going. We'll keep at it anyway like that. That's it really. I suppose there's a lot more. I suppose you could be here for the day going on about what you can and what you can't do. It's intense. It's really hard. But look, if you love it, you'll do it. And that's, I suppose, why we're sticking at it. when I decided I was supposed to be a stay-at-home mum, I suppose we had to turn around and we had to supplement our income. I suppose that is one of the reasons we did set the orchard. Now, like that, we also do the poultry side of it. We do the turkeys and the chickens. And it's all work, work, work. But we're getting there. And like I said, if you don't love what you're doing, you have no business doing it.
When farming today, diversification is key to ensuring a future and maintaining it as a full-time career, as Sandra explains.
You have to, because, I mean, we're classified now as a very small farm. We milk 40 cows. Like that, we have 5 kids to rear. You just can't depend on dairy for it. And I suppose that is one of the reasons we did diversify. And it is, I suppose it's a big step to take. You'll be worried, will it work or won't it work? But you have to have that courage to take that step. And look, if it doesn't work, it's not the end of the world.
Growing up on a farm can be a great education for life. Having to get up early, do your fair share, and look after your responsibilities.
Oh, absolutely. Look, from a very young age, they were all involved. They know what hard work is now. I mean, they know rain, hail or shine, there's work to be done on a farm. They get up, they do. And I think it stands them because they know what work is and they know you have to work to make a living, and it's not going to be just handed to you. I think that's what they all do, and they know it. We have the bees and we have the hives, and my oldest girl, Katie, she's always on hands-on with those, and even my younger girl, which is only 16, she has to put on her suit and go out and harvest the honey when she knows it's harvesting time. And they take no notice of it because they know from a very young age they've done it and they can do it. And I think that's the main thing. They know they can do it. It's just that they do it.
Like many women in agriculture, Sandra is a role model for the next generation to take up the baton.
Oh, absolutely. Like that. I suppose when you see it being done by myself as a woman, you know that you can do it. There's no there might be a few obstacles there, but you can always get across obstacles if you're willing and determined to get there. I can't see why you can't. It's just that you might need a bit of support, and once you have support there and they know that we're here, myself and Michael, for them at any stage of their life, and I think once you get encouraged enough, you won't fail. You have a choice in life for everything. If you want to go on a farm, you work on the farm. If you have the love for the farm and the land, why not do it? I mean, don't be afraid. I mean, I would tell every girl out there, if that's what they love, take the step, take the chance, and see where it leads.
And did all Sandra's children enjoy farming?
Well, look, I think they do, because at the end of the day, when they were knee-high, they were involved in it. And I think they love the freedom of the land. They love so they can walk out in the fresh air. They have fields to walk if they want to walk. And if they want to have a alone time, they can go way down a field. And they know that there's great freedom in it. And I think they do love it. There might be times, all right, they say, oh, do we have to do this today? But at the end of the day, they're always out behind you when you want them.
In Sandra's opinion, there is no reason why more women shouldn't be pursuing a career in agriculture.
Well, yes, you kind of say, well, why can't I get over this obstacle just because I'm a woman? I think myself, this, I have been farming here over 30 years with Michael. There isn't a job out there that I wouldn't be able to help him with and do it with him. Everyone needs help. I think every woman can do it if they really, really want to do it. And if they put their mind to it, who's stopping them? Who has the law to stop them? Who has the right to stop them? At the end of the day, you can do what you want in life. And if that's what pleases you, go and get it. Go do it.
Sandra O'Dowd there. We'll take a break. We'll hear more from Sandra after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now let's return to our documentary series, Fields of Change, Women in Agriculture, featuring Sandra O'Dowd. Another arm of the farm is the dairying side.
We're here now inside in the milking parlour. Morning and evening job. To the six-side milking parlour. The cows come in behind here and they come in and we milk here. Now in the mornings we'll be up around 7, Garrett and Michael. I myself would be milking in the evenings then as well. One of the girls might be helping me if it's silage time. Myself and the girls would be at it. Michael and Garrett would be busy themselves because they have their own silage outfit, we'll say, and they do their own silage cutting and harvesting. So if the weather is there, they're gone. And we're left here then in the milking parlour doing what has to be done in the evenings. The cows will be calving February, March, so from February onwards, and we're still milking at the moment. So we'll be milking maybe into November, the end of November, depending on the weather. If it gets really wet out there, you might dry them off that bit earlier. We milk about 40 cows. Look, like I said, they classify us as small farmers, but I think it's the right way to have it. I think it's, I know you're more passionate about it. I mean, we have cows here for 12, 13 years. We have names for cows. I suppose as the kids grew up, the kids used to be naming the cows, and if we still have the cows, they're always called by the name. The love for the cows was always there by the kids and ourselves. So we won't be getting any bigger. We're happy with what we're milking at the moment.
Being a dairy farmer can be difficult, as you are tied to it for a long period of time.
Well, of course it's difficult. You kind of have to make a lot of planning. If you want to go somewhere, if you want to go away for a few days, you have to have everything lined up. You have to have everything planned. I suppose you can't just say in the morning, right, let's go away for 2 nights. You could be a week planning and who you can get in and who can help out. And now we're so lucky. I mean, if we do want to go away, the girls and Garrett, they're there, and we know that they're going to come in and they're going to run it just as well as ourselves, and we know everything is going to be done properly, and that makes you relax more.
It has been a tradition in farming that the eldest son would inherit the farm, or that it would go to the male in the farm. So is this tradition changing?
It might be changing, but it's changing very, very slowly. I think it's the son always ends up getting the farm if there's a son there. I think the only way girls are getting farms is because there's no son in the family. That's totally wrong. I mean, Garrett, the girls, Katie, Michelle, Louise, Sharon, they all do their bit here. And I mean, why just because they're a girl that they can't inherit the farm? Just because their name might change, that's totally wrong. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, move on with the times.
Another side of the business is poultry farming, which has been in the family for years. And in one part of the farm, there's a field of turkeys.
We have done turkeys for years and years. Michael's mom and dad done turkeys for years and years. And like that, I suppose when we took over the farm, we took over the turkeys as well. They'll be here now. They'll be all ready for Christmas. And as you can see, they're fine and healthy. They're out. They're out in the fresh air. And like I said, more work, I suppose, but it's a part of our life. It's part of Christmas for us. I suppose since I came here over 30 years ago, there was turkeys here, and there still is turkeys. They're different breeds. The white turkeys are white, and then the other ones are bronze turkeys. Like that, I don't see no difference in the taste of anything, you know. It's just that one have kind of bronzy, white, blacky feathers, and the other ones are white.
Sandra's daily working life is full of variety.
I like that. I suppose at the end of the day, you can go out into a farm and you can be doing something different every day. It's not just the same thing over and over again. I mean, we could be taking honey from the bees one day, you could be dosing cows the next, and you could be picking apples the next. There is a great variety, and I suppose it's nice that you can have a change, a mindset of something different that's ahead of you, rather than the same routine day in, day out. We have the same customers coming back numbers and numbers of years. I mean, there's actually people coming here. I suppose they're coming 30 and 40 years from when Michael's mom and dad were doing it. And now, I suppose, even their children are coming, still getting the turkey on Christmas Day. It's like a tradition. They get the O'Dowd's turkey on Christmas Day. And look, they're getting the quality, they're getting the quantity, and I think they know where it's coming from. And I think once you know where your food and things is coming from, I think it means a lot. it's definitely meaning a lot to know what you're eating.
So what does Sandra love about a life in agriculture?
Well, I love the fresh air. And I love, I suppose, with what we're involved in, I love where all my food is coming from. Look, I think it's a lovely and great place where I grew up, my family. There's nothing like it. And I think girls and women have to realise that farming is out there and they can do it. And once they're determined to do it, they should go and do it.
And finally, what does Sandra think is the future for women in agriculture?
Well, look, everyone needs a helping hand. And I think if there was more help out there, more support from other organisations, they would be more inclined to take the chance. Like I said, it's a big chance to take, but if you have the support, it's that bit easier.
Yeah, Sandra O'Dowd there, and I want to thank her for welcoming me to the farm, and her husband Michael as well. And we actually got a turkey there, would you believe, for Christmas, and it was lovely. So funny to see them running around while we were doing it. they were on the plate at Christmas dinner, but it was very enjoyable indeed. Now we'll take a break, and after that we'll be talking about the Pilgrim Pats.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, the Pilgrim Pats Easter Festival is taking place Friday, March 29th, all the way to April 7th. Its organiser is John G. O'Dwyer, and there's two Kerry walks included for National Pilgrim Pats Week, an Eastertime festival celebrating Ireland's pilgrim heritage. And I spoke to John during the week. Over the coming Easter period, large numbers of walkers will retrace their ancestral heritage as they take to Ireland's penitential trails to celebrate Pilgrim Pats Week, including two ancient trails in Kerry. And I'm delighted to say, on the line to tell us more, we have Chairman of Pilgrim Pats Ireland, John G. O'Dwyer. John, how are you?
I'm delighted, and thanks very much for the invitation to come on. Always nice to speak to the Kerry people.
Exactly, and it's always nice to speak to you too, John, about these this Pilgrim Pats. Just remind people what the Pilgrim Pats are again.
Well, I suppose if you went back a long time, if you went back 10 or 15 years ago, no one would have a clue. I suppose more people have now. But what they are is, they are some of the oldest pilgrim paths or penitential paths in Europe. And they go right back. And, I mean, some of the ones we'll say that would be like the ones in Kerry, like Canucknadobber and Cossan na Nave. They're certainly early Christian, but there's no doubt about it. We can be fairly sure that they go back to the pagan period, and Christianity was adopted later on, was adopted into these paths, and they became pilgrim paths, just as the Tohar Fáric up in Mayo, as well as that would have been originally a pagan path to a pagan mountain, sacred pagan mountain, Cúchán Agli. St. Patrick came along, Christianized the path, and here presto becomes a Christian side, Cúch Patrick. So I love saying this to Spanish people, that, you know, their path, which is so well known, the Camino, was a little over 1,000 years old. Our paths go back more than 2,000 years.
And so tell us about the week itself. Tell us what's going to take place this year.
Well, there'll be walks all the time going ahead. So on Good Friday, down, I suppose, not too far country, you'd know fairly well, there's that great big attractive mountain there that's right out beside the Ring of Kerry. And I think before Pilgrim Pats came along, there was only a few local people going up by the stations of the cross. Now they have a car park there, and I'm told by the local people that it's quite busy all the time, and that's fantastic. So on Good Friday, which most people are off, there's a walk to the top of that mountain. And I suppose I can say it maybe to the listeners, but you'll know this very well. If you get a clear day on Good Friday up there, I would consider, and now that's, I've been to Donegal and been everywhere, to me, it's the finest viewpoint point in Ireland up there. A walk to the top, take you 2 or 3 hours, and it's all kind of organised by the local community.
And that's Connaught na Dubber, John.
Some people call Knock na Dubber, but it's Connaught na Dubber, the
Hill of the Well.
Mountain of Well.
Yeah.
And that will be it. So that's the first one that goes on there. And then the next one, on Saturday then, which is Holy Saturday, well, like we have St. Kevin's Way. Now, Kerry people could go up there maybe to do that, but that's going ahead on Saturday. And there's also, but the important one I think most Kerry people will be doing then on Easter Saturday, there's a guided walk of the Cossáin an Éibh. Again, one of the really old paths. And it's loaded with antiquities along the way, all reminders of the pagan period and then how the thing was Christianized. And of course, it's wonderfully serene countryside out there, looking out over the Blasket Islands and the Three Sisters. That I absolutely love it, with Mount Brandon in the background. Now, you don't go to it, you don't have to go to the top of Mount Brandon. It's just a pilgrim route to the base of the mountain. And that'll be going out at about 11 o'clock from Ventry. Now, again, people want information, I could be giving them order, but the best thing to do is to look up pilgrimpath.ie. They're the two main ones in Kerry, and then there's other ones going on. I mean, they're going on in Clare, and again, you can look it up in on pilgrimpath.ie. There's ones in Ballintubber Abbey as well as that, and there's ones up in Donegal on the Loch Derg Trail. But getting back to where we are here, I think it'd be remiss of me if I didn't mention that just over the border then, there's a beautiful pilgrim path, and it's a 2-day pilgrim path, and the walk on that is on Saturday and Sunday, 6th and 7th of April. And of course, it's of course St. Finbar's, and you know, it is a beautiful path. The idea was that Finbar came to Drimaleague, didn't like what he saw of Cork people, urged them to repent. And then some of them followed him, and he made a 2-day journey across the Sheehy Mountains and, of course, into the wonderfully serene Guagán Barra. That's a great walk. And the great thing about doing any of these walks is it's fully organized. So if you come in for that, you know, you will, the first day's walk, we'll say, on St. Finbar's will be to the village of Cailkill, but you'll be brought back to your cab then afterwards in Drimaleague, and similarly when you walk the second day to Guagán Barra. And of course, all these then can be got together. You can take it on board. We have a pilgrim passport, and all these paths are together in a pilgrim passport, so you can get your stamp, you can complete all 5 paths, and then you can get your certificate by applying to Ballintubber Abbey.
The potential of the pilgrim paths as a tourist kind of, I suppose, add-on, like, there's huge potential in that. We see the increase of walkers coming to this country, so, and I'd imagine, you know, promoting the pilgrim path would only add to this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see huge benefits in it. We haven't, you know, we've made several presentations to the powers that be, and have got lots of promises. We haven't seen a lot of action on the ground yet. But for example, I am going out now on St. Declan's, which I didn't mention because we don't have time. But that's another one here. I'll be going out to Rock and Cashel to meet them. And they are a group that are flying in April, 27 of them flying in from Los Angeles. And they're coming in to do St. Declan's Way. So, in other words, they would not come to Ireland otherwise. And there are very, very few tourism products that are powerful enough to bring people in their own right. I mean, no matter what you say, the Rock of Cashel, even the famous Ring of Kerry, I don't know if people come in and say, well, we do the Ring of Kerry, we have to do that, and they will see what they're doing. They have it as a portfolio of products. But people, as I say at the moment, about 300,000 of them go to Spain every year to walk the Camino. We have older paths, a reputation for spirituality, and a huge diaspora in the United States. Now, these are some of the diaspora coming in, but we need to get the message out there. We need support from Tourism Ireland and Fáilte Ireland, because pilgrim paths are fantastic. If you want to put a new visitor centre in Killarney, anyone that's going to be anywhere worthwhile, you're looking 20 million. The pilgrim paths already exist. You just have to maintain them, support them. St. Declan's Way, 110 kilometres, reopened for €250,000 investment. So there's a real win situation there.
And it's not just, I suppose, the busy summer months either.
Yeah, well, that's it. You can get into the shoulder season. And that's why we try to pull. So that's why Pilgrim Pass Week is around Easter. And then we have the Irish Pilgrim Journey, which is still kind of in the shoulder season because it's in June. Because there's no point. You did the Cossáin an Éibh, there is no point in bringing coal to Newcastle, bringing tourists down to the Dingle Peninsula in July and August. So we don't do it. So it's a good one in the tourist season, on the off season, and then we have some walks in September as well. We're trying to do that, but potentially that station. In fact, most of the walking down to the Camino, the big months are May and June and September and October down there. And I think we could go the same way. So lengthening our tourism is great because we have the infrastructure already. Let's fill them in the off-season.
And for these rural communities, these people, I suppose, are staying in a particular area for an extended period of time rather than just passing through in a car.
Yeah, well, that is the thing. I mean, you know it yourself. The problem on the Ring of Kerry is that an awful lot of people stay in the tourist hub of Killarney. They come out, they might have a cup of coffee Carras Eireann or Waterfield or whatever, but by and large, they don't make a big spend and bung up the traffic. Now, when you're talking about these people coming in through St. Declan's Way, they're walkers. Therefore, they're going to stay in places that are very, very close to the pilgrim path, because that's what they want. They want their meals, they want everything else there. So it brings people out into rural communities. I think Knocknadobber, for example, if we can get enough people doing the Ring of Kerry that they go up Knocknadobber as well, the simple fact is they'll probably have to stop in Waterville or somewhere like that, and it's overnight spending. That's when you see the real return from tourism.
Yeah, Carras Eireann there, right next door, could be its headquarters, yeah. It's a brilliant weekend, so remind people one more time, or week, we should say, and it's not just the week, anyway, like this, Pilgrim Paths are there always. So where can people go, and when is it on again?
Yeah, it's on. It's starting on Good Friday, and is a little bit longer than a week. We've stolen a couple of days, and it goes on then to the weekend after Easter. In other words, the Sunday, the 7th, which is after Easter, and it's all up at pilgrimpath.ie. But remember, you can do all these paths yourself. They're all insured, fully waymarked, everything else. So anybody can come out. They can come down to Kerry, go out and do the Ring of Kerry, climb Knocknadobber, and then maybe spend the night in Carras Eireann or in Waterville or somewhere like that.
Yeah, brilliant. John Joe Dwyer, Chairman of Pilgrim Paths Ireland and writer, thanks a million for coming on and telling us all about it, and best of luck with it.
Gore Míle Maha, good for you, Shane Joe.
Yeah, thanks to John Geo Dwyer there. Now, before I forget it, K-Fest, which is an absolutely wonderful festival, Rochelle there got in touch with me, Rochelle Lucy, that they have an open call for artists to exhibit artwork at K-Fest Arts Festival, and that takes place in Killorglan from May 31st to June 3rd, and it invites visual artists and performing artists to submit their work for inclusion in the 2024 Visual and Performing Art Pop-Up Gallery Programme. All artistic media will be examined and considered. Submissions are welcome from Irish and international applicants based in Ireland, and K-Fest places a high regard and a valued interest for the inclusion of artwork from new emerging artists situated within Ireland. There are no submission fees, and the final selection of artworks will be based on artistic quality, thematic connection and feasibility. And successful candidates will receive €150 as well as evening meals on Saturday and Sunday of the festival. And furthermore, all exhibiting artists will receive automatic entry into the K-Fest Arts Award at €1,000 with additional four runner-up cash prizes. And for more information, or if you have any questions on that, you can email art@kfest.ie, art@kfest.ie. And if you Google K-Fest as well, you'll get all their information there. Now, after the break, we'll be talking about St. Finian's Holy Well in Glenbeg.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, the committee of St. Finian's Holy Well, come on in Glenbeg, are having their 10th anniversary walk and mass at the Holy Well this Easter Monday. Over the past 10 years, they've raised thousands of euro for different charities. This year, to mark the anniversary, they are not charging anyone to walk, but they can give a donation if they wish, and they just want people to come and enjoy their anniversary. So during the week, I caught up with Sean Roach of the Glenbeg Holy Well Committee. Now, I'm delighted to say Sean Roach from the St. Finian's Holy Well Committee joins me now, and that Holy Well is in Camon in Glenbeg. And Sean, we were chatting off air there, tis, I think 2019, since I took a lovely walk with you from the Kerry Bog village there all the way up to the well. And the well is in a spectacular location, isn't it?
It is, Joe, and in fairness, the well, in fairness, it has been there now since for the last centuries, but over the years, especially in the last maybe 40, 50 years, say from the 60s to the 70s and 80s, it had gone overgrown and it had gone into despair, and you couldn't get access down onto the well there. So in 2012, Pat Donovan, a member of our committee, said that we would open up the well, and it was a tremendous amount of work being done there for the last 12 years at the well, because you couldn't get access up and down to it, Joe. There was no way you could get down there. I brought my mother up there many years ago, and she wanted to go down to the well, and we just couldn't get there. But we set up a committee in 2012 under Pat Donovan, and only for his vision we would be here today. And we brought on board South County Partnership and the RSS workers, and in fairness to them, for the last 10 years we've been working there, and we have brought the well back to what it should be. It's a spectacular place for anybody to call. For people who don't know where the well is located, first of all, if you take the road from Killorgan to Glenbay, and as you go beyond Carrabridge and you come to Corrigee National School, you'll take a left there up to Trina Manor, and it's up there on that road about 2 kilometres, and there's a car park spaces as well there, and then you can walk down, so you can walk all the way and have surfaces. It's not a long walk.
Yeah, and we approached it from the other side that day, didn't we?
We do. When we have the walk every Easter Monday, we walk from the Red Fox, where John and Olive, who owns the Red Fox, and their son Tim now was taken over. They opened up the pool facilities for us there, and they gave us the toilets, the car park, and they gave us food we could down in Henderson. And we take that walk, and we go up towards Cara Lake. We cut across the top of the mountain and down into the valley. It's a magnificent walk for anybody out there who has nothing to do on Easter Monday. To come back there, it takes about it's 4 kilometres to the well and 4 kilometres down. And if anybody who can't walk, we have a bus to take them up. And at 2 p.m. at the well, we'll have a mass. And that is said by Father Pierre Nussullivan, PP of Glenbay, who has been with us down through the years and said mass Easter Monday. And I would like to thank him in fairness when he comes every Easter Monday and says mass for us. And we also have the St. James's Choir. They sing up there, and we had it for the last number of years, and we're hoping to have them again coming up on Easter Monday.
Yeah, it's a fantastic occasion. Now, the restoration of the well, you were mentioning a few people there, and it is important that people like that are thanked, because, like when you mentioned your mother that time, and for people that do want to visit, because this would have been, you know, part of the community going back so many years, generations back, and it's important that those people are thanked that brought it back to life.
I think we should all remember our ancestors, and they gathered around the well to honour the importance of water, and they depended on that for their survival. And it was also a place where, let's go back to penal times when the British were here, and it was, you couldn't say mass, the priests were being hunted. It was at these wells that people came, and they said their prayers, and they brought the priest if they could, and they would have a lookout, and you can look at this well and you can see why it would have been for masses or congregations for religious prayer, because you can see down the valley, and you can see anyone coming from every angle. And when you stand at that well today and look out, you can look down over the beautiful Tara River, across all the way to Inch and the Slaveless Mountains. And you can look left, and you can go back towards Dingle and heading out towards Kelly Michael. The well is called St. Finian's Well. It's called after St. Finian, who founded a monastic settlement on Skellig Michael in the 5th century.
Excellent. So once again, remind people where you're gathering, and if people want to come along, they can come along. It's a free walk. You're accepting donations, all right, but you did, which should be mentioned as well, have raised an amazing amount of money for charities over the years as well. So remind people again, where do they go if they want to participate?
We would have raised over the last 10 years, it's for all the other charities. We don't take much, we only take a donation. So we would have raised possibly coming up to being 50, 60, maybe 65,000 euros for different charities. And the last charity in 2023 was for the Family Resource Centre in Killorgan. So if there's any, and this year it's for us just to maintain the well, because it does cost money, and only for the local people who give us donations. And we had a big job there last year, and we had to get higher in there, and Anthony Nockman, in fairness to him, he came with all his gear, and for the whole weekend he had 2 crew, and they walked around the track walking with us, and no fee was charged, and I went and take a thank you to him for all of it. But any person that's coming to the walk should check in at one to the well. It'll take about less than 3/4 of an hour. At 2 o'clock, we'll have some mass. We'll have mass, and then we'll walk back down, and there will be refreshments, and there'll be entertainment, and maybe spot prizes and food at the Red Fox afterwards. So if there's anybody out there who'd like a nice day to come and walk, we'd be delighted to walk with us. And we will be having mass up at the 2 o'clock for all the people who have worked with us down through the years and their intentions. And we'll remember our ancestors as we are there.
Excellent. And that is on the Easter Monday. Well,
Easter Monday.
Yes. Well, Sean, thanks a million for coming on and talking to me. And best of luck. And hopefully the sun will shine on you that day.
And thank you very much, Joe. And thanks to Radio Kerry for all the support we've got down through the years. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Sean Roach there, and Sean asked me as well to remind me to thank all the locals that have helped over the years, that have helped out in the walk or have contributed in any way to it, that their help is greatly appreciated. That's all we have time for on the programme this morning. My thanks to Niamh Daly, who was on sound. Francis is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry, and I'll be back in a fortnight's time. Frank is on the way next Saturday morning from 9 a.m. And a reminder to send your photos for In Focus to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Until then, look after yourself and take care.